Y'all, I've got Robin Bradley, and some of y'all remember her or know her. She is a friend. I used to be on staff here with church planning, and she is the wife of Zach Bradley, who some of y'all may remember and know from being one of our church planners. And they have planted Brookhaven Presbyterian Church, and it is growing and thriving, and I hear great things about it all the time. I bump into people all the time that go there and just love it. So she is pastor's wife there. They've got three daughters that are 5, 7, and 2. So she's like me on the girl train, all girls. And she's a licensed counselor. And so she gave us an awesome talk last year. A lot of y'all were here for right at Valentine's Day on keeping the romance alive and talked about a lot of aspects of keeping the romance in our marriage. It was so good. If you didn't hear it, you can go back and listen to that on the podcast. But she covered like all the different, not areas, but the different, what's the word I'm looking for? All the different, physical, emotional. Well, it was really good. It was really good. So we loved it so much. She came back and she's going to talk to us today about talking about sex with our kids. Because, you know, we're all on the front end of that. And it's like, where do we even start? So I'm going to let her take it. And we're very excited. Thanks, Robin.
Hey, thanks so much for having me again. I see some familiar faces. I also spoke at MOPS recently. And so I think some of you are three timers now. You've seen me three times. Thank you for coming back again. And, you know, just there you go. Eventually we'll have like a punch card and you can. So anyways, yes, thanks, Aaron. Yeah, I'm super excited to be here. So through the church planting process, we were at Perimeter for 2 years and we just love it here and it feels like home coming back here. So thanks so much for having us. So today I'm going to be talking about talking to your kids about sex. And I kind of have, I have this talk that, I've modified for a bunch of different age groups. And this one is more focused on kind of preschool slash elementary school and younger. So just so you know that. I have a couple things in here about teens, just kind of as a reference point, but I'm spending most of my time talking about talking to your little ones about sex. So I'm going to start off with, can you read that? So I'm put up here, the conversation is unavoidable, and here are some statistics that are not meant to be scary, and they're actually even kind of dated because they're from 2011, but nearly half of all high school students report ever having had sex. Nearly 3 in 10 girls in the U.S. get pregnant at least once by age 20. 20% of teens overall and 11% of teen girls ages 13 to 16 have sent nude photos of themselves electronically. 39% of teens have sent and 48 have received sexually suggestive messages via text, email, or instant messaging. And then of those who are 15 to 19 years old who have had sex, 55% say they wish they had waited longer. And so these are sobering statistics. They're not meant to be a scare tactic, but more to be an encouragement to us that of kind of what we already know, anecdotally at least, that some of the consequences that our kids are facing are increasingly more serious, both emotionally and physically. But again, it's not really to scare you. But just to encourage you that what we're talking about, even when they're really little, has big impacts later on. And so kind of like an encouragement to fight the good fight and stay in there because we want to fight for our kids. So anyways, I know a lot of times, even me as a parent, when I read those, I kind of start to feel helpless. Like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? I don't know. And so, I mean, I think we pray a lot. But also some of the rest of the talk will be kind of talking about ways that we can go ahead and start these conversations. Because I think it's encouraging, the national campaign, can you read that a little bit? It's okay if you can't read all the things. But the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy, they've done a study about, you know, what teens say are the biggest influences on their decisions to have sex. And so this is the part that's encouraging to me. I don't know if you can see up here, but it says, who most influences your decisions about sex? And up here, teens ages 12 to 15, 52% say that their parents do. That their parents' voice is their loudest voice in their decisions about sex. Teens ages 16 to 19, even it's 32%, which I feel like, I guess I would have thought it was lower even at that point, if that makes sense. And then, of course, it gets, the parental influence kind of wanes as they get older, you know, up through age 24. But kind of on the back end of those kind of scary statistics at the beginning is an encouraging statistic that kids want to hear about sex from us. And that they are listening, and that our voices do matter. And so, So that's why I'm actually talking about this and why I actually feel so passionate about it. Okay. So I am a licensed counselor, and I'm in private practice in Dunwoody, and I love what I do. I just work part-time, which is great. And on our first day of counseling school, you know, in grad school, I walked in, and the professor was like, well, what's the goal of the first session? And we're all like, well, you know, make people feel comfortable, you know, all these good, you know, like, oh, and talk about cognitive therapy and, like, all the things that we're learning, you know. And he's like, well, actually, the goal of the first session is a second session. Right? If you think about it, right? Like, even as a business person, it's like the goal is to come back, right? To have another conversation. And so if you don't hear anything else this entire morning, and if I don't say anything else this entire morning, the main thing that I want to say is that the goal of our conversations with our kids about sex and about those types of things is just that it's an ongoing conversation. It's not this one time you pull out the books and you sit down, little Johnny, and we have this conversation and we don't talk about it again until you're grown. The goal is that we just keep the conversation going. And so if that's kind of, you know, the thing that you take away, it's an encouragement that all you're trying to do is just keep the door open to have another conversation later. It doesn't mean you need to say all the things. It doesn't mean you have to know all the answers. But that if you're able to continue that conversation, that's a great thing. And so let me say this too. Inherent in sex education are two pieces: giving information, which is facts, and then giving direction, which is values. If that, you know, it kind of makes sense. So the example I have up here is, you know, so your 6-year-old comes to you and says, "Will I have sex one day?" And your response could be, "Yes, you probably will have sex one day," information, "when you are grown up and married or in love, et cetera." And that's the direction piece. So you're kind of giving the facts plus the values. And so I just wanted to give a caveat too, that inherent in talking about all this, you can't talk about talking to your kids about sex without some values in there. And I want you to know that my talk and my values are informed by my Christian faith, but also my psychological background. But as we go through, I might be saying things that you don't feel like fit with your values, or that's not exactly how you would do it, and that's totally fine, because we all have our own values. And so I wanted to kind of give that caveat that please feel free to take it and modify it to what fits you and your family. And so if it's okay, I'd like to go ahead and start a quick table talk here with the people at your tables. And the question is, between those two things, I hope that makes sense what I'm saying, with the giving information and the facts and then the direction/values piece, which of these is more comfortable for you personally to discuss with your kids and why? Okay, so we're going to keep going if that's okay. Sorry, I don't mean to make you, you know, but good conversation. I'm actually just curious. You don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to, but I'm just kind of curious. Was there like an even split between those who felt like giving facts was harder or giving direction? Like, what if facts were harder, do you feel? Facts feel harder to kind of discuss versus values, like in the direction piece? Is that any hands raised? No worries. It's okay. I feel like it's interesting. Sometimes it's kind of 50-50 where kind of some people just feel a lot more comfortable with one or the other. I don't know why the counselor in me thinks it's interesting. Okay. So next, I'm just going to be talking about some general conversation guidelines, kind of like we were saying before. The idea, right, that's funny. Do you have any questions, or can we just avoid this subject for the rest of your life, is the caption, which it's funny. When also funny to Google sex, like, education memes. That's a funny Google. But all that to say, you know, these are just kind of a compilation of some general guidelines that I've kind of found throughout doing this and talking with people and kind of what I've read. And mostly still in that same idea that the goal is just to have that ongoing conversation. So this is a conversation that hopefully will last years to come. So these are just some general guidelines. Okay, so first is, I think that some of us at least have a fear that acknowledging sex is going to somehow condone it, if that makes sense. That even speaking it out loud, especially maybe with older kids, less so with our younger kids, that even talking about it is somehow going to be putting our gold seal of approval on it. And that's just not true in the way that especially a lot of the research is done. Acknowledging sex is really not the same thing as condoning or encouraging it. And kids can figure that out. Again, from that survey, 88% of teens said it would be easier to postpone sexual activity and avoid teen pregnancy if they were able to have more open, honest conversation about sex with their parents. And so, again, we just got to be talking about it. Another guideline is just to discuss early and often. So that's one of the reasons that I love talking to groups like this, because we can start from the bottom. It's a lot easier to build a framework from scratch than to spend a lot of time and energy trying to deconstruct things that they've already heard or picked up from friends or the media or whatever it is. It's neat because we get to be the first voice. And again, kind of what I said before, but it is important. It's not the talk or the one and done, and you know, you sit down. I feel like that's kind of, I guess, how I grew up thinking about it. It was more of like, okay, now you have the talk, and then you're done. And then just go with God. You know, like, good luck for you for the rest of your life, you know. So it's a lot less like that and more just an idea of starting small and building on it. And then this is from, I'll reference this in a minute too. On this little table over here, I have a bunch of resources. And one of them is from Stanton Jones, and he, and they have a book about just talking to your kids about sex, which I really like. And they talk about looking for teachable moments and becoming an askable parent. And again, with that dialogue, keeping it open, but things like day-to-day moments, like a pregnant neighbor or, you know, a couple holding hands at the mall or something like that, ways that you can increase your child's comfort in asking questions and then even reinforcing and praising them for asking questions. And saying, you know, great observation. Like, I'm so interested, you know, like good for you for asking that. I'm so glad you asked, even if behind you're like, oh my gosh. Just say that you're glad that they asked. Okay, so the next one is, so we're not just trying to prevent bad things from happening, but we're trying to equip our kids for good things, if that makes sense. And I think a lot of times when you do think about, like, the big sex talk, it's a lot about anatomy, and then it's a lot about, well, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. And it's so interesting, right? Because from what we know in parenting, positive messages actually carry a lot more weight than negative ones, if that makes sense. Like, I don't know if that makes sense. Like, what to do rather than just don't do this. So it's neat because, again, we have this opportunity to say, this is so important. This is so amazing. These are good things. It's an opportunity to honestly assess our communication with our kids, you know. I tell people, and I think I've got it somewhere else, but if you can talk with your kids about sex, you can talk about a lot of things. Cleaning up your room doesn't seem like a big task now that we've talked about sex and things like that. And it's an opportunity to increase positive interaction overall with them. And I also want to just say it's okay because, I mean, I do this. I talk about sex. I say words like vagina and penis all the time and talk to people about it and still at times feel uncomfortable with things that my kids will ask me. I'm like, ooh, I did not know that would be a question. Didn't know that your brain does like that. That's okay. But it's okay to feel uncomfortable, but just be careful that your nonverbal cues are not communicating and giving unintended messages that you have, right? Either that it's wrong that they asked about it, right? Or that you're uncomfortable and you're just trying to get it, you know, or whatever. Even as much as it is difficult, just be aware of your nonverbals to make sure that even if you are uncomfortable, you're sharing that in a way that that you mean to, if that makes sense. And I think it speaks volumes to our kids that we will continue to have a conversation with them even if we are uncomfortable, right? It's like, this is so important and you're so important to me. And I'm kind of stumbling around. I don't really know exactly what I want to say, but I want to be in this conversation with you because you're important to me, you know, and this is important. And then the other thing is it takes a village, and it really does. And that's one of the great things about having a group like this where you can talk with other moms and other moms who've been there or moms who are going through it right now. But also even, you know, trusted other parents that you really respect and trust, even family members, and even educating them on how you're approaching sexuality and sex education, and seeking resources together. So I have a friend who, you know, it's just, you know, who's trying to use the correct anatomical names for, you know, all the body parts. And this is ongoing funny thing with her mother and being like, no, we say vagina in the bathtub. That's what we say. And the mom's like, yes, that's what we say. Like, okay, yes, I'm going to say it, like, it's okay. But just kind of educating, this is where we're coming from. This is what we're trying to do as a family, and then having it be reinforced with those around you. Okie dokie. I'll have time for questions at the end. So if you just think of, or if you think of one, you can raise your hand. I don't know. I don't really know what the best format is. And so this is just a general encouragement. Like I said, you don't need to have all the answers. You just need to be a person that your child can talk to, if that makes sense. So don't worry at all about trying to know the answers. I have often said, hey, I actually don't know the answer to that, but I will get back to you. But the big thing is actually getting back to them, right? Bringing it back up again and saying, you know that really good question you asked me the other day? I actually looked it up. I talked to a friend. I did this. And this is what I found, right? And that's just going to keep that communication doorway open, that they know, you know, how great would it be that if our kids had a question about sex or the body, about things like that, that the first person they thought of was to come to us and ask, you know? Amazing. And again, if you can talk about sex, you can talk about anything. So if you're doing this hard work in communication here, then it'll pay off everywhere else. Okay, so the other thing, actually, let me pause real fast. Does anyone have any questions about those kind of general guidelines? Because then we're going to kind of move on to some other stuff. No, you know what? Just kidding. Let me go through that because I might answer your question, right? Right? Okay, good. We'll keep going. Okay, so those are some general guidelines. For some of the nuts and bolts, I'm going to include this slide in the next one about kind of general ideas of what we should be talking about or what could be appropriate to talk about at different stages. I don't know if you can read that, but Cliff and Joyce Penner, I really respect them. They've done a lot just in sex therapy in general, but they do have some books about talking to your kids about sex. And so they're talking about kind of the critical learning, but then the impact on sexual adjustment based on the different stages. So with infancy, for example, the critical learning is bonding and trusting, building that attachment. And then the impact on sexual adjustment would be capacity for intimacy, if that makes sense. Toddlerhood, touching, naming, and control of genitals leads to positive acceptance of genitals. Preschool, a lot of question asking, and this is leading to open communication about sex. And so those are the kind of the ones that I think that we're mostly in right now. So that is also another good reason that you can look at the book series. A lot of them, two of them specifically, are divided by age. So you can kind of look at it and get an idea of, okay, this is a book generally geared towards an 8-year-old. Let me see what's inside of it. But again, like I said at the very beginning, you know, you're in your family. You know your kids. You know your situation. So even if there's a book over there and you're thinking, man, my 5-year-old seems kind of young. I don't know. This seems a little bit more than what, or vice versa. Please make sure that you take into account your own environment, even birth order, honestly, right? So like, you know, a child who's 2 but has a lot, you know, older siblings might have a different sort of awareness than vice versa, if that makes sense. And then kind of even your kid's own temperament when deciding what might be appropriate to speak with them about. Okay. So there's not... So the takeaway is that it's, although this is a chart, it's not generic. It can't be, it's not on every, it doesn't fit for every family. And the same thing with this. This is from the American Academy of Pediatrics. And these are some of the recommendations that they have before puberty. So whatever, you know, and kids hit puberty at different ages. So kind of these are some of their general guidelines about what children should have a basic understanding of before they hit puberty. And I can just, I'm not going to read them out loud. You can just look at them if you would like. Kind of general ideas. Which makes sense that you would probably want to know about those things, especially before they happen to you. Okay. So another thing that I appreciate and try to keep in mind, at least, because some of this, right, is like what I read about and research, and then a lot of it now, even just my 7, 5, and 2-year-old, are things that I'm trying to practice, you know, so it's like kind of neat. I used to give this talk when my kids were like 2, and there's nothing wrong with that, but I just didn't have as much, you know, and now they're 7. Don't get me wrong. It's not like I think they're, but it's interesting to be doing this section because I've always said these are good questions. You should ask these questions when you're talking to your kids about sex, and now I'm doing it, and it's kind of hard, and so it's good to keep going. But a lot of times, like, so if your kid comes up and asks a question about, like, where does a baby come from and things like that, it's a lot of times really good to ask, what do you think? What do you think, you know, because that will clarify a lot about what they're actually asking. You know, I have had that sounds funny, but like little false alarms where I'm like, okay, she's bringing it. It's time. Here we go. You know, like it's not the one and done, but it's like, you know, we're coming. And then it's more like, I mean, did they come like, you know, from the hospital or did y'all come from Target? Like, you know, where'd they come from? You know, like, and it's like, oh, hold on. That's not what you're asking, you know? So it's good to, say, okay, what do you think about it? And in that, you'll get more clues about what they're actually asking. What do you already know? You know, like kind of in that, that helps kind of get a fuller picture about what they're actually asking and where they're coming from, right? Because if they're talking about a friend that said something, if they're talking about something they saw on TV, you'll get a lot more information about what their little mind is, you know, what's ticking in there. And then you give your answer, right? Or you address what it is that they're trying to ask. And then you ask, did that answer your question? right? I will say most of the time when I ask this question, the answer is no. That I didn't answer the question, right? And so it's good. It's humbling, but it's also good. It makes me thankful that I asked that question, because otherwise we would have moved on. I would have been like, great job. You did it. You said things. We were moving forward. And my child's standing there going, that wasn't what I was asking. I don't know what you're talking about, you know? And so asking, like, did that answer your question? And then sometimes I'll say, do you have any other questions? Or did that make you think of something else you wanted to ask, right? Did that make, you know, our conversation, did that spark something else that you were wondering about? And even if it's like, oh my word, I don't know what she's going to say next. I say she because they're all three she's. But, you know, I don't know what they're going to say next, right? That is my way of trying to be an askable parent, right? Because it's like, I'm not the one who's trying to shut down this conversation necessarily. I may be uncomfortable, but I'm arranging my face and I'm saying, you know, do you have more questions? Did that make you think of anything else you want to ask me right now in the car, you know, whatever it is? Because in that way, what I want is for her to feel like she ended the conversation, if that makes sense. You know, she got to the point where she asked the questions she wanted to. She got the answer. That was good. It wasn't that I was going, okay, all right, great, good, we're done. Does that make sense? So for this table talk, I'm just doing two table talks, if that's okay, but this is what the other one. Which of these questions do you feel like seems most difficult to ask in the moment and why? And I talked a little bit kind of about my own experience, but which one do you feel like would stand out as kind of like, in that moment, I feel like it would be more difficult for me to ask this than the other ones? Okay, we're going to keep going, if that's okay. Thanks so much for discussing amongst yourselves. I think I said it before, but if I had to pick one, it would be the do you have any other questions? Because then you just don't even know what's going to happen next. All right. So next, we're going to talk about some sexual safety. And that's really because, especially at this young age, that's kind of we'll be talking about sexual safety with our kids throughout the rest of their lives. But specifically at this age and stage, I think that there are some basics and some kind of groundwork principles that a lot of these are probably not unfamiliar to you, but still worth touching on. So again, Jones over there on the table, I'm pretending he's on the table, kind of talks about that the best way to prevent abuse of your children is to give them the beliefs, skills, and supportive environment that will best protect them. And that makes sense. So I'm going to spend time talking about the beliefs, the skills, and then the supportive environment that we can offer our kids to equip them to be well. I mean, we know that short of putting them in a bubble, we can't prevent bad things from happening to them or prevent them from, you know, seeing or, you know, I mean, not even terrible, you know, but just like things that we can't prevent, really anything, which is kind of scary. But it doesn't mean that we shouldn't try our best not to equip them and to teach them, especially when they're little. So for example, number one, your body is private, right? And it's so interesting, right? Because I think that there's a big difference between private that is like good and special and private that's kind of shameful. Does that make sense? And I feel like that's a very fine line, but one that I think we need to be cognizant of, especially even when we're talking about their genitals or their private areas or things like that. There's a way to talk about them in that it's so special and that's why it's private, right? Instead of that there's something wrong with it or that it's weird or something like that, if that makes sense. So that's just one of those little things. It's more so probably even in our body language and the way that we talk about it, that those things are communicated or miscommunicated. So it's just an encouragement to us all, myself included, to make sure that we're having, you know, body positive messages in the way that we're delivering them. So for example, these are just kind of examples. So one way that you might want to talk about your body being private is, you know, that no one has the right to touch you or look at you without your clothes on, except for mom and dad / a doctor or a safe adult who is keeping you healthy and clean. And so especially for my littles, I feel like this is kind of like healthy and clean. So we go to the doctor, keeping you healthy. That's okay because I'm here. You know, also that, you know, like the doctor shouldn't be looking at you. You know, the reason it's okay. And I've actually had pediatricians who've said that in my presence, and I really appreciated that, where they're like, I'm going to, you know, look at your body, and the reason this is okay is because your mom's sitting right there, you know, and this is okay. I'm trying to keep you healthy and then trying to help you stay clean, right? Because that's another thing, like certain, like if a grandparent's giving them a bath or something like that during bath time, the idea is, okay, there's keeping me healthy and clean. Another one is that we don't keep secrets in our family. Yeah, go ahead. I think that's a great example too. Yes, exactly. Yeah, helping to keep you safe, you know, healthy and clean. Exactly. I think that'd be great because then they might be going at different places and you don't know. You can't necessarily give a list of like, these are all the people who can help you go to the potty, right? But that's a great way so that they can kind of trust, okay, this makes sense to me because I just use the restroom healthy and clean. Great. Thank you. And then the idea that we don't keep secrets in our families and talking about the difference between a secret and a surprise, right? That a surprise, someone will find out soon. With a surprise, eventually someone's going to find out, right? They will find out eventually. And it'll make them feel excited or happy or loved. And a secret, a lot of times, someone may say that you can never tell, but it might make you feel yucky or sad or scared on the inside. And even honestly, like because in therapy, we have this phrase, I didn't come up with it, but you know that secrets make you sick. And it's in that kind of way that it kind of makes sense, right? Those things that we are keeping inside. And sometimes it's good to talk to kids and say that, you know, sometimes, you know, when you get to that point, I mean, it's all, I'm sorry, because it feels like a downer to talk about these things because it's so scary. But at the same time, I think we should still talk about them. I'm still up here. But even if someone says something like, your parents are going to be mad at you if you say this, right? Or like, or they won't, they're not going to love you if you share this. Just kind of saying out loud, like, that's not true. There's nothing that you could ever tell me that's going to make me not love you. There's nothing that you can ever tell me. You know, if you talk to me about these things, I'm so thankful that you talked to me about them. I'm not going to be angry. And then trying to back that up even with all the small interactions so that they have that comfortability to come to you. And then to trust your feelings and to pay attention and act accordingly. And so even when little kids are coming home from school and kind of like, well, these kids at the playground, it's not even related to sex, right? But like these kids were doing this thing. I just didn't really like it. I didn't feel comfortable. So I went and played with my other friend and just reinforcing, that was great. I'm so glad that you paid attention, that you didn't like that game. That wasn't fun for you. You didn't feel comfortable doing that. And you went and did something else. That was so great. Trying to reinforce that. Okay. So those are some of the beliefs. Some of the skills that are part of this is recognizing danger. So I realized that I did not grab the books off of my own bookshelf over there on the table, which would have been helpful. I'm going to tell them to you right now, the ones that are my go-to, right? Amazing You. You can get it off at Amazon.com. That's just one of the like body names and things. And I think it's geared for younger. You can look at it on the reviews. I think it's 5 and younger. But it's called Amazing You. And it's like on our bookshelf. So that's why I didn't bring it. The other one is the Super Duper Safety School. Sounds funny, but that's what it is. And that one is a really great one I really like about recognizing danger and teaching that skill in our kids. And it's a book, and it's not a scary book, and it's good. You can kind of read it with them. I've read it with all my kids. And they in there have, you know, it's the idea of kind of good touch, bad touch, right? Developing body awareness, even specific situations. And so, for example, my kids, one day they're going to have a talk and they'll be like, my mom used to do this weird thing. Anyways, and that's fine. But I talked to them about like, you know, but what if someone says they have candy? You know, like, oh, like candy, like my 5-year-old loves candy. What would you say? What are things that you could say? You know, okay, and then practicing that. What if they say that they have a puppy? I know that sounds funny, but it's like, oh, I have a new puppy. Don't you want to come see my puppy? I know it sounds, see again, it's like scary to talk about, but honestly, candy and puppies and kitties and stuff like that, that's sometimes a thing that, you know, kids, you don't necessarily think about, they wouldn't think about being like, oh, I shouldn't go see that puppy. I love puppies. You know, like, of course I want to go see a puppy. So they talk about that in that book. The main thing I want to talk about is tricky people. And that's one of the things from that book called the Super Duper Safety School. And it's based on the idea that they did a study. Someone did a study sometime. I'm sorry, I'm not giving you these details, but about asking kids what a person who might hurt them looked like. Right, like just physically what they looked like. And they found that especially for young kids, what they described was much more of like almost a cartoon character, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Like a person who would want to hurt me is, you know, this big and they have 3 eyes and they have, you know, their face is green. And it makes sense, right? Because that's like kind of what they're seeing. And so they were talking about how there's this disconnect where sometimes little kids like that are expecting the person who's going to, you know, even when we have these talks with them, the person who's going to come after them looks like a monster, if that makes sense, right? Or like a cartoon character. And so this book talks a lot about tricky people and ways that kids can recognize tricky people. And one, that they are people. Like in the book, it's regular looking people. Again, I feel weird talking about it, but it because it's scary, but it's just important. So like one of the things that they talk about and one of the things I talk about with my kids, this is a good example, I think, is that they talk about how tricky people a tricky adult will ask a kid for help. Does that make sense? A safe adult asks adults for help. Tricky adults ask for kids for help. And so it's just one of those things that you wouldn't think, like, I would never think to say it like that, but it makes so much sense, right? A safe adult's going to ask another adult for help if they need to help finding their lost cat, right? They're not going to ask a kid. And so it's kind of great examples like that, that, as I'm saying too, are not scary. My kids read that and they're not like, oh my goodness, I'm so terrified. It's just sort of like, oh, that makes sense. Okay. And I even actually read an article recently about some kids who, because of this book, were able to recognize a tricky person who was, you know, and got away, because they had come to ask them for help. Anyways. Okay. So, let's skip the teens one, but, another one is kind of being assertive. And I spend time on this one too, because I do have three girls, and I feel like in the South, a lot of times, there's like this idea of politeness and kind of meekness, and you kind of just go along with stuff. But kind of this idea of also teaching them that it's okay to be assertive, and praising them for speaking their minds or asking questions or demonstrating strength. And that there's a big difference between like meekness and weakness, if that makes sense. Especially in the South too, I think that we, I don't know, maybe. I've only lived in the South, so this is my idea. But I think we sometimes inadvertently teach our kids to silence the little alarm inside of themselves, if that makes sense, you know, because it's kind of like, ooh, I don't really want to give this person a hug, but, oh, it's your aunt so-and-so, give them a hug, you know, or at church, it's like, oh, go, you know, oh, go sit with them, and they're kind of like, I don't really want to sit with them, but no, do it, because it's polite, that's what you need to do, that's your whatever, et cetera, and so, especially, I think, maybe with girls, and especially in the South, we need to be careful not to silence that little alarm, that we need to teach them to hear that little alarm that says, ooh, I don't. It might be their grandparent that they love and that we know is a safe person, but if they don't want to give them a hug, if they don't want to sit in their lap, we say, that's okay. Like, that's okay. Like, you need to listen to that little alarm inside of you. And especially kind of with that whole building a village around you, if you've had those conversations with those people that are part of your trusted community, then they'll understand, you know? Okay. Another one along that lines is that no means no. This is another skill, right? So we in our family, some families tickle, some don't. My kids love to be tickled, so we do tickles. But we have this phrase, and they would tell it to you, when kids say stop, adults should stop. That's just how it is. And so we have said that every time. And if they say stop, no more, it's done or whatever it is, or even just wrestling or whatever it is. When kids say stop, adults should stop. And my husband and I both at the end of whenever they say no, we say that and they'll say it with us sometimes. When kids say stop, adults should stop. That's just how it is. You should know that. Adults should stop. When kids say stop, adults should stop. And kind of reinforcing that even just in games, you know, even a game that they don't want to play doesn't even have to be like tickling or something. And that's helping them teach that their no is respected and that they should be able to say no and that something should happen because they said no. And then especially, I mean, I will put this one in with teens, helping teens walk through peer pressure situations. I think that's one of the things that I found was giving them language. And it also helps with our kids too, even in their young age, kind of walking through situations and being like, well, how could you say you don't want to play that game? I mean, even if it's not related to, you know, sex and those types of things, but how could you say that you didn't want to play that game or that you didn't want to go over there or that's not something you wanted to do? Another thing is, I didn't put it on here, but I kind of the good touch, bad touch. We just in our family, we do hugs or high fives, you know. So it's kind of a way that we found that you can still acknowledge people and like at church, especially like, you know, it's not just like being, you know, whatever. But it's like you can give them a hug or a high five, and I tell my kids they can give me a hug or a high five, and sometimes they just give me high fives. It's okay. I'm their mom. It doesn't mean I get to hug them all the time, you know. Like you kind of want to, but I want to teach them it's okay to just say I'm just going to give you a high five. That's okay. That's good. I'm glad that you listened to your body and you didn't want to give me a hug. That's okay. Like, I don't actually even talk about it because it's not a big deal. But hugs are high fives, and that's kind of a nice way that, like, even at church or someone, they can kind of give someone a high five and have the option to do so without just giving hugs all the time. Did that make sense? Okay. The last one is just that supportive environment. And kind of behind it is in those actions, right? Saying it's okay just to give a hug or a high five. Saying it's okay. Teaching them to listen to that alarm. It's just the idea of standing behind our children, you know, and really helping them to know that we're listening and that we're supporting them and it's okay for them to say no. It's okay for them to prefer to do something else. It's okay for them to be in charge of their own bodies and to decide kind of what they want to do. And then part of that too is just reinforcing those beliefs in that supportive environment. Encouraging our kids to talk to us, to trust their feelings, to take action and helping them to learn to trust us even more. And then the last thing about the supportive environment is just kind of being aware of your child's world. I know we're already doing this, but that is actually part of all the safety, knowing friends and neighbors and other parents and things at your school so that you're just kind of aware of what they're encountering on a day-to-day basis is just really helpful. Okay, we're almost done. So I wanted to speak a little bit about dealing with negative cultural messages, because I think that's one of the things that, especially as believers, we're kind of figuring out, okay, how do we do this? We don't put them in a bubble. They encounter things, but then what do we do after that? And so I heard another speaker, I'm going to use her example. It was not for this, but it makes a lot of sense to me. She was talking about how she was walking through the mall with her kids, and I think they were a little older, maybe like 11 or something. And they walked across past one of those giant Victoria's Secret, ladies, in the storefront. And so they walked, and the little girl kind of stopped and was staring, at the picture. And I think it's so interesting, right? Because she was wise to take a moment and talk to her daughter. I honestly think I probably would be like, oh, don't look. Okay, well, let's go. Let's just keep going. Or also, like, the other children are running away, and so I have to, like, But she paused and took that time, and I think that was really great. And so, for example, I'll walk you through kind of what, again, from that Jones person. Really, I'm just telling you what they would say, but also you should read the book. Okay. But the idea of inoculating our children by deliberately exposing them when possible, and not exposing, but like taking that time to talk to them about it, to the counter arguments and pressures they will be exposed to later on in life. So for example, when your child or her child is standing there looking at that Victoria's Secret model, and there, I have nothing against Victoria's Secret, it's clarifying that untruthful message from culture to help the child identify it, right? So saying something like, what are you thinking when you see this? Or like, what made you stop? It's so interesting, good for you realizing that, you saw something and you're kind of looking at it. Are you unsure? What are you feeling? And then trying to say something like, I think part of this is that culture is trying to say that a woman's body is to sell things, right? Or that a woman is valuable if she only looks a certain way, or that her physical, beauty is this or that. And so kind of just putting a fine point on some of the things that like, yeah, that doesn't seem exactly right. And then encouraging and helping the child to articulate both the appropriate Christian truth and then some objection to the destructive message. But what do we believe, right? What do we believe in our family? Do we believe that a woman's body is used to sell things? That's not what we believe. Again, this is like for an 11-year-old. What does God teach? Oh, God would teach that a woman's value is in Christ, right? Not based at all in kind of what she looks like and that beauty is on the inside and all those things, whatever you feel like is most appropriate in that moment to address with your child. And then fill in for the child other arguments against the destructive messages so the child can grow further in learning. So furthermore, it can actually be dangerous if women start to believe that that's all that they have to offer, right? It can be dangerous if we start to believe that all that matters is on the outside, those types of things. And then praise the child for his or her understanding. I'm so glad you stopped and noticed. I'm so glad that you asked me about that. I'm so glad that we paused for a minute and took a moment to see what is it that we're dealing with here. And again, trying to keep that conversation going. I'm not uncomfortable because you asked me about this. And even I brought it up because it's so important to me and you're so important to me. Okie dokie. Yeah, definitely. I think that I would say two things. One, I think teaching our little boys that a woman's body is not for selling things, right? And things like that, and that beauty is not only on the outside, all those, I would still say, especially for younger, if that makes sense, just because I think that those are some just good things that we can always say and would always apply. I think especially as they're kind of getting older, and especially, again, I don't have boys, but my friends who have boys said that when it's like, oh, they're looking at me a little bit differently when I'm getting to the shower. Maybe it's time to not, to not be naked in front of them anymore, et cetera, those types of things. And similarly, when they're looking at something and it's a little bit different and they're looking at it in a different way. But I think that's a great point. I think that some of the stuff that they talk about too in that book is kind of the idea of kind of like a first look, but then kind of redirecting, right? And kind of like trying to, you see that, but then like, especially like you're talking about when it's coming back up in their mind, and like it's something that they don't want to see or something that they want to do, talking about changing the channel in their heads. That's a language that I use sometimes. Okay, well, we can change the channel. That's a good thing. Like the Lord's given us, ability to do so in our mind. So like, yeah, that comes up. I understand why that would come up because that was a large picture. That was larger than life. That was in your face, kind of those types of things. How did that make you feel? Well, I didn't feel good looking at it. Oh, well, why do you think that is? Well, I don't know. She didn't have a lot of clothes on. Yeah, you know, like, okay, yeah, I'm so glad you noticed that. I'm so glad that you saw that. And then talking about ways to, you know. Well, then ask why. Yeah, then you can ask why, you know, like, yeah, women's bodies are beautiful. You know, they're meant, you know, they are, she's a creation of God, et cetera, those types of things. However, then kind of with that information and the values from the beginning, if that makes sense, putting those values around it, right? In our family, we really believe that, you know, that type of clothing, right, or to see a woman like that really is really for women in marriage, right? Or that that would be a way that a husband would see his wife, et cetera. That's what we would believe. Obviously, Victoria's Secret doesn't necessarily, I mean, I feel like I'm batting down on Victoria. I'm not, but you know, whatever the thing is, you know, that's not necessarily what they're saying. But in our family, this is what we believe about that kind of skin showing, this kind of beauty, that kind of, I don't know, advertisement, if that makes sense. I don't know if I fully answered your question. It makes sense, kind of. Yeah. I think in general, it's just more, I would ask what he's thinking, if that makes sense. I would go back to those four questions and get more information about what he's really processing in that moment, because it probably could be a really wide range. I'm looking at you, but I know other people have boys and stuff, because I feel like to answer it well, you would really need to know what he's thinking about, if that makes sense. Yeah, definitely. And I think it's good to be aware of that. And I think that, like, kind of the, like we were saying, kind of the nonverbals and the way that you're talking about it will communicate so much about your feelings around him seeing that and noticing it. Because of course he's going to notice it. I notice it. You know, we all notice it. You know, it's like, you know, how could you not notice it? It's great advertising, you know, like we all notice it. But kind of just coming from it from that angle. Does that make sense? So, yeah. Okay. So the last thing done is, what if I'm starting later than I wanted to? If that's, you know, like, what if my child's already in first grade and I haven't had any of these conversations with them, et cetera, all this kind of stuff. That's okay. It's never too late to start, and it's better late than never, right? Because it is that ongoing conversation. So even if you're jumping in a little bit later, that's okay. Even though your kid may seem uninterested or like they aren't listening, they usually are. I actually think that's probably across the board, even about brushing teeth. And then if I could encourage you, I would encourage you to start with the boundaries that directly relate to safety, right? So if you're going to start somewhere, start with safety and then branch out. And then using this opportunity to learn more about your child's values and goals, right? Because when you're talking to them about these things, you can hear from them what they're picking up on, what they feel is important, what they're noticing. And then teens, right? But helping them to connect limits to their own values, systems, and goals. But it makes sense for our kids too, right? It's that idea of like an internal motivation versus an external motivation, right? So the external motivation is that I'm standing here with my finger pointed, but it's actually, no, the internal motivation kind of going back there is like, no, but I want to be respectful of women's bodies. So when I see this, then I'm going to XYZ, right? But that's because I want to be respectful, right? Or I want to believe that beauty comes from the inside. So that's how I'm going to approach this. And helping your child connect kind of what they're dealing with to their own values and goals and things that they want to be about will be way more reinforcing. And then again, not trying to catch up all at once, like, oh, I went to this and I got 6 books and we're going to sit down and we're going to read all the books like right now. Don't worry about it. Right. Because again, it's just, you're expressing your availability to be there to talk about these things. So maybe start with 1 book if you want to, or no books. It's okay. You don't have to take any of the books. And then you kind of go from there. And then the main thing, like I said before, is really just that it's an ongoing conversation. So you don't feel like you have to do it all at once. You don't feel like you need to have all the answers. It's really your presence with a lot of parenting, honestly, that will be most impactful. So that's the end of my talk. Does anyone have any questions? I thought it was a good question. Yeah, go ahead. No, good question. Yeah. I honestly think a lot of that, and I was speaking more like from experience, is I think some of it depends on the child, right? Because I think some kids, that's great. That's the vagina. They're just moving on. They aren't going to ask any more questions about that. That's done. You know, and they're thinking about something else, right? But then I think there are kids who are more interested. Okay, what is that? Oh my goodness, why is this? You know, what? Oh, they're, you know, all that stuff. And then those cases, I think that kind of taking a lead from your child and what they're asking and kind of what they're interested in. And then, I mean, yeah, I would say all the words, you know, like all the terms that you can give her or him, based on their own questions, because yeah, they're looking to us. You know, it's better that they hear it from us than something else, because in that we can also be expressing our values inherently in the way we even talk about body parts, if that makes sense, you know. But so I don't know if I answered your question, but I think that kind of going off of where your child is and what they're asking for, their age and their curiosity and then kind of just their temperament, really. Because I think, honestly, temperament has a lot to do with what they're going to be interested in and what they're having questions about. Does that make sense? Right. Ooh, that's a good point. Yeah, no, okay, so I'll say this in my own, again, I'm not an expert, and I realize that my kids are seven, my oldest one's seven, so I just want a big caveat, but I'll say this, when I've overshared, it's gone way over their heads, and it didn't even matter, to be honest. I mean, like, you know, like, because it really was an overshare, and it didn't even, they did not even have the proverbial peg in their brain to hang that on, and so it just flew out the other side, so it was okay, right? Because I have done that, and like, when my child was looking at me, they're like, it's kind of glazed over, and they're like, can I watch Doc McStuffins now? I'm like, great, good talk. Like, this was good. So one is, I don't worry too much about oversharing, I think, well, you know, within reason. And then the other thing is, I have talked to my kids about how, what I say is, every family makes this is such an important thing, and every family makes decisions to talk about this in different times. Right. And so it's kind of the idea of like, this is special information that families talk about with families. And so we don't go to school and talk about our vulva. We don't go to school and talk about this or that we talked about the other night. Not because it's wrong. And I say not because it's wrong, but because every family makes decisions about what they want to do. And we want to be respectful of what other families decide. And so that's kind of the language I put around trying to put boundaries around it. But even that, still, not because it's dirty, not because it's secret, not because it's like weird, but because it's special. And so we want to be respectful of what other families are doing with their special talks. That make sense? Yeah. Oh, I think it can just be his body, you know, like, you know, we kind of say we don't touch other people's, you know, I mean, not like a hug, but we talk about like the parts that, you know, maybe for that age, parts that are covered by your bathing suit, right? Like your private areas. I think it's okay even at that age to start reinforcing that we don't touch other people there, you know, and that no one should be touching you, you know, kind of that whole thing, healthy and clean. But other than that, like, no one should be touching you. But also even that, you know, like, I think you're right to kind of know, like, okay, I don't want to just be like, no, don't, you know, like, whatever, but just kind of be like, oh, you know what, that's, remember, think, you know, I know he's not wearing a bathing suit right now, right, but he's wearing a diaper, and so the things that are covered by his diaper, that's still part of his, you know, that's his private part of his private parts, or part of his, you know, his body that we don't touch, etc. And it's so interesting though, right? It is different than yours. That is so interesting. Isn't that amazing that God made us different? That's so cool. You know, almost kind of like that. It's, I don't know, it's kind of what I would think. Yeah, because, you know, and it's like, cause you're keeping him healthy and clean, you know, cause like I'm wiping his diaper. Oh, he got, oh, look, there's poop everywhere. Oh my goodness. What in the world? You know, like just making it more playful. But, even in saying it in those ways, I hope my tone is coming across as positive. You know, it's not cause it's like, that's yucky and we're not, you know, whatever. It's like, no, like that's special. That's his own private area. And that's, and you have your own private areas and that's covered by his diaper. So we're going to let that just be his. Yeah. So that's a really good question, because I would always ask, what do you think? Right? Because I think that will give you a lot of information about what they're actually asking. And like you're saying, there's a wide range, right? Like she's saying her 1.5-year-old is asking questions in a certain way. I would definitely get more information before answering that. But I would also direct you to some of the books, because I think that they have some good resources for what kids might be asking at that age. I'm trying to think. My 2-year-old doesn't talk really, but I think that like, I've said anything from it comes out of the vagina, because honestly, I think that's like kind of what at times my kids have been asking. And that was it. And I was like, do you have any other questions? And she's like, no. And I was like, okay, good talk. You know, because it was literally just like, how does it get out? That's like what, you know, like, how does it get from in here out? And that's like all that she was asking, if that makes sense. And then the whole kind of like sex question of like where they really, you know, where they come from, how they're made. I would say in general, I don't think my 2-year-old would necessarily be asking that, but it could be. And so asking those follow-up questions, but I think that a lot of the books have some good language, especially around kind of how you might want to, explain that. Like some of them are talking about like when mommy and daddy love each other very much, you know, or whatever it is, those types of things. But yeah, I think that there's, I'm sorry it's not a firm answer, but I think depending on temperament and kind of what they're asking, I think that the books would be a good resource about kind of language around that. Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I mean, I think, so honestly, I think if I'm hearing you correctly, I think it's less about the mechanics, right? Because like it's still a man and, you know, all that, but more kind of like the story behind it. And I'll say this, I think that, because I'm actually adopted and we have adopted kids too. So this is just anecdotally. I think that there's a richness about the story that you can tell him about all the factors of how you learned about him and how you were so excited and you're waiting and all these things and preparing for him that would honestly probably at least emotionally mirror those of the way that you would talk with your biological child about, and then we were so excited and you were growing in my tummy and here's a picture of you and all these, you know, things like that, right? Because I know that at least for me growing up, although I didn't have sonogram pictures and things like that, the richness of the story around my parents wanting me and all those other things, I kind of think serve that same purpose, if that makes sense. So maybe if you can't answer the exact question about like who your dad was, et cetera, and et cetera, you know, or biologically, I think there's still like that richness around the story and the narrative that you can tell, if that makes sense. Any other questions? And you can always feel free. I didn't put my email up there. You can email me. I'm sorry. I didn't even bring cards. I'm here. But it's yesterday I went to the gym with my shirt on inside out. That was good times. I just left it too. I saw it and I was like, I don't know. Just, I don't even care. I'm like, I have on a shirt. That was good. So do you ever do that? I'll have on like a sweater on, like a sweatshirt on top, and I'll be on the treadmill and I'll like take it off. And for 2 seconds, I'm like, do I have on a shirt underneath this shirt? You know, because I'm like, oh my gosh, what if I just, anyways. Okay. So, but, oh yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's a good question. I think I would probably try to incorporate it more just like in daily life, right? So like maybe, and I don't know how old, because you might be bathing them or not bathing them, but just kind of like, okay, now we're going to, you know, we're going to wash your penis, and okay, now we're going to wash, you know, whatever, like, or whatever, and like rinse off your, you know, whatever, your vagina. Let's make sure we rinse off all the soap. We don't, you know, want it to sting, anything like that, if that makes sense. I think that I would, especially if a child's not seeming interested, I would maybe just try to just throw them in more conversation, you know, like conversationally, like even if you fall and you hurt, oh goodness, did you hurt your penis? Oh, I hope not. You know, like you, oh, okay. No, you're okay. You know, I don't know. Like, I know it sounds funny, but like just kind of throwing it in there rather than like a big sit down. Because then you're still giving that information without a weird, you know, I don't know if that makes sense, but yeah. So yeah, no, good questions. Yeah. Good. Okay. One. Yeah, no, that's good. My personal thought, a lot of this is just my own thoughts. So just, you know, just take it with a grain of salt, like block of salt, because this is just stuff that I've done and we are still figuring it out because mine's 7. So I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I would say for that, especially like if she's in her room, the thing that I've kind of put more boundaries around with like self-exploration and just kind of nakedness in general is more so just like where you do that, right? So, like, if you're in the kitchen and you're looking everything, then it kind of be like, oh, my goodness, that's so special. Like, that's great. Like, we like to look at our body. You know, if we're going to be naked like that, or that's, like, isn't that amazing that God made you this way? You know, in our family, we like to do that kind of like in our bedroom or in the bathroom or something like that, just because it is so special and we wouldn't want someone to walk in the door and just, you know, be able to see it. I don't know. That didn't sound so good, but something like that. And then, yeah, but, like, honestly, it's very developmentally appropriate for kids to be curious. And so within your comfort, just trying to encourage, yeah, like, wow, isn't that amazing? Like, that's amazing. Like, God made each of these parts to function for a different reason. You don't need to go into all the, you know, but just kind of that, like, that's so amazing. God made your body to work exactly how it should. Isn't that amazing? You know, that kind of thing. I keep saying amazing. I think that's my word that I try to, that's amazing that you're doing that on the floor right now. Oh my goodness. Like, that's so amazing. Like, okay. And then you just kind of walk off. Yeah, but like trying to, you know, encourage her. But yeah, I think asking the questions is not bad too, especially if part of it is like, oh, that is something that's hurting, or that's something that doesn't feel comfortable. It can be, usually I think of like the 10th, like way down the line, and it's usually something way far back, like, oh, my underwear is kind of stuck up inside. And I'm like, yeah, you pull it down. Like, that's good. Like, good. We just that's called a wedgie. Like, we're going to pull that back down. And that's usually what, you know, like, I don't know if that makes sense. So, okay. The second is, sorry, what was the second question? Oh, your husband. Yes. I would say, if you can, I think the person who's there addresses it. If you have questions that you feel like let's say you have a little boy and you ask that, it could not hurt to add the end, be like, do you have any questions for daddy? Did that make you think of something you wanted to ask daddy? And then that way, or vice versa, right? The husband. Exactly. Oh, but did that make you think of something you might want to ask mommy? Okay. And then kind of adding that in, because that makes sense. Exactly. Right. And she might have felt certain, similar ways or like kind of those types of things. I think that's a good question. But especially because kids don't like, it's just so quick, it happens and then it's done. Like, so it's like I would say try to address it as it's happening. I honestly think that the child will start to do that themselves at that point. Yeah. They will stop talking with the opposite parent gender, the gendered parent, when they don't feel comfortable anymore. And so I don't think we have to. Yeah. Good. Right. Yeah. Right. Why is daddy breathing so hard? Yeah. I mean, maybe show him that first slide and be like, this is why, dude, but also, I mean, yeah, just continue to have this conversation. I think it's okay to just, I know this sounds funny. So I would say one is just kind of getting on the same page and having a good conversation about like, okay, it is uncomfortable, but why are we doing this? Okay, this is because, like, not just the statistics, but because our kids want to hear it from us. And I know you know that, but just like saying it out loud, like, let's revisit, this is why we do this. But then also, I know it sounds funny, but like practice, have him, like, help him to practice things that feel uncomfortable, or just practice arranging his face. I use that term a lot because I arrange my face a lot. But, just like, even if you are feeling uncomfortable, that's totally fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you're doing it, try to make this, or whatever it is. I know it sounds silly, but I don't know. Giving grace and understanding, but also helping him with his nonverbals, maybe. You might not know it, but it seems like you're uncomfortable when you, that's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we've gone over time. I'm sorry about that, but thanks so much for having me. Okay. And if you have another question, so my email is rbradley. It does not, I'm sorry, it's not on here. But I do have on a shirt. rbradley@atlantacounselingcenter.org. So feel free, if you have other questions or concerns or violent objections, to email me. Don't email me with violent objections. Just, feel free to email me if you have any questions. And I really appreciate you guys having me.